This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
My name's Maggie Parsons. I work in Great Yarmouth and Waveney, in North, which is on the border between Norfolk and Suffolk. And I'm a nurse by background, but at the moment I do commissioning of cancer and end-of-life care. Our main challenge in our area, really, is that we have significantly inconsistent care provision of palliative and end-of-life care. And what I want to try and achieve is a much better level of consistency. And for me, the route to that is through education and training, as well as helping staff from wherever they are coming from health and social care, from the voluntary sector, from the independent sector, or domiciliary care agencies, is to ensure that they all have access to education and training around end-of-life care and palliative care, and also some pragmatic care tools to help them to implement that care effectively. We live by the seaside down in Great Yarmouth and Waveney, and one of the most significant things that happened to us within the palliative and end-of-life care community recently was that we took part in the Marie Curie Delivering Choice programme. And the most beneficial thing about this was that it brought everyone together from all the different care settings, and we went through a very robust process of needs assessment and redesigning services and defining a care pathway for our area, which meant that for the first time ever that we actually had a shared vision of what the care was that we wanted to provide, which we'd never really managed to do before, partly because the relationships were a bit fractious between all the various different stakeholders, and also because it was very rare to get all the stakeholders together in that way. But from an education and training perspective, these were the issues that came out. And one of the key elements was that it was such a fragmented provision across further education, higher education, in-house training programmes, which are often provided by specialist palliative care services, in hospitals, in community services, through the county council, and that there was a proliferation of activity, all of it working towards slightly different aims and objectives. Also, there was sometimes a slight misperception that palliative and end-of-life care was only a specialist area and therefore could only be taught by specialists. And we wanted to try and shift away from that so that we included specialists, of course, in the education and training, but that we didn't necessarily rely on them to provide training to all of the people who needed it, because they could never train enough people to make an impact. Also, we identified that most of the training was focused on registered practitioners rather than bands 1 to 5 who provided most of the hands-on care. There were lots of short-term initiatives to upskill generalist staff, but no real strategic approach to how to embed palliative and end-of-life care education into the system a bit more. And all of this, of course, had an impact on care delivery, again evidenced through the Marie Curie Delivering Choice programme, which was heartbreaking to read the patient and carer stories of the variability of the quality of care that they received, the numbers of different people that came up their path to provide care. I think the most we had was 24 different people coming to one person's house over a week to provide palliative and end-of-life care. There was a real variability in the level of awareness of best practice in end-of-life care, and also quite a paternalistic approach rather than encouraging and supporting effective self-management, both for the families and also for staff looking after them. And we also realised that there were significant taboos, particularly on the staff side, around death and dying, which prevented them from using tools like advanced care planning and stopped them from having those conversations sometimes when perhaps patients and carers really wanted to go there. So what we tried to put in place was a local framework to help practitioners to access the education and training that they needed, and also to know and understand what best practice really looks like. So through the Marie Curie Delivering Choice programme, we defined a care pathway which looks strikingly similar to the national one. And we looked at what other tools really people needed. And we felt we came up with a resource file which we're distributing across all care settings that describes what best practice looks like. It has examples of the streamlined documentation of care that we're implementing, so that we have one set of documentation across all care settings for the end-of-life care pathway, for the livable care pathway, gold standards framework and advanced care planning, and do not resuscitate, which I'm sure many of you may have done already. And also we looked at the information that was available for patients and carers to help them to make informed choices. And sadly, what we discovered when we first did our look through the information that was available, that only two leaflets were currently in use across our patch. One was the Liverpool Care Pathway information leaflet, and the other one was a photocopied fact sheet, which had been photocopied about a million times, about what to do when somebody dies. And I think that really sums up where we were at as an area, in that there was no advanced care planning, and nobody really thought about dying until the person actually was dying. And so what we wanted to do is to try and coordinate our approach to palliative and end-of-life care education through a shared strategy, through linking into our local SHA's e-learning programme, and then putting in place what we're calling a community pathfinder approach, which is trying to build on the existing community of practice in the community care setting, and then also, excitingly, to establish an academy for palliative and end-of-life care with our local university and further education for colleges. So the strategy really contains a set of recommendations for commissioners and providers of care and for education providers, and looks to build in palliative and end-of-life care into the specifications and contracts for relevant services, because if it's not in the contract, it doesn't get done and it doesn't get performance managed or monitored. To build in palliative and end-of-life care into care providers' clinical governance infrastructures, so that it ensures that the providers of care know and understand that they need to ensure that their staff are competent and maintain their competencies, and also that it's within the operational policies as well to ensure safe and effective care. And then the last part was to look at all the different curricula across further education and higher education, in-house training, and try and ensure that palliative and end-of-life care was considered as a core competency area rather than an optional module, which is where it normally sits, and so people can avoid it if they don't really want to go there. So our SHA has developed a really great e-learning programme, and we've also got end-of-life facilitators who are funded by the Cancer Network to roll it out across our area. There are two parts of it, one focused on registered practitioners and one for care home practitioners. And if you go onto the East of England SHA website, you can have a look at it. As is always the way, we've had significant problems with the e-learning part of it and the IT side of things, which is why we've also had to develop face-to-face delivery of it as well. We've also developed local education and training with the aim of providing that on a multi-professional basis, targeted at particular issues and particular staff groups who are having problems, to try and ensure that, again, that there's a consistency of approach around documentation, around knowing and understanding what good symptom control looks like and how to use the end-of-life care tools properly. We are also looking at providing that training in the workplace, because we found that it was really difficult to get people to come out of their busy working environment. Our community pathfinder approach is really about trying to create a cascade system within existing communities of practice. So we have a Macmillan GP lead for palliative and end-of-life care, and we've just recently recruited a district nurse lead, and together the pilot is looking at them going into a GP practice and working with their district nursing teams to look at what their training needs are, to provide the training that they need, and to support them from a you could call it a project management approach, I suppose, really, to implement the end-of-life tools properly and fully across their GP practice population. And then for the GP practice and the district nursing teams to take ownership of that and to work with other practices in their area to replicate that, and also with their associated care homes and community hospitals to begin to build the existing community of practice in that geographical area to be a much more meaningful thing, and to encourage that peer support and peer working and peer pressure sometimes to help everybody to implement the end-of-life tools properly and embed them into their practice. This work has been supported also by a locally enhanced service agreement, which has been developed in our area, particularly with care homes, supporting better end-of-life care planning. Oops. And then just to touch on the academy that we want to establish, this is again about bringing clinicians and academia closer together so that so that there are opportunities for practitioners to do more research and to support practitioners to be more reflective about the care that they provide and to evaluate it within the context of academia, and also to provide a coordinating point for a more strategic approach to palliative and end-of-life care education across the professional groups, across the education providers, and to establish a quality award scheme, which will be an annual process for highlighting good practice, because we spend a lot of our time bemoaning the state of care provision, and actually I think we need to celebrate excellence as well. And so the outcomes that we're aiming to achieve would be more competent staff across all different care settings, which is hard to achieve and quick to say. We want to achieve better quality and consistent end-of-life care and improve choice for patients and carers so they actually are able to have choice, and then, of course, reduce inappropriate admissions along the way to the acute setting wherever possible. And to encourage individual practitioners to do research and to evaluate the effectiveness of their care in a more structured way. So what I'm aiming to achieve with another transport-related metaphor at the top is that everyone has the opportunity to have a Rolls-Royce service. At the moment, I think that we sometimes provide a kind of Ford Anglia level quality of care, and that's not appropriate. What we want is that these outcomes for every single person, that everyone has the opportunity to have the choices of the care that they would like and to the quality that everybody would wish for their own family. And so we continue to embed the end-of-life care tools. I think it will be a life's work to ensure that they are fully embedded. I think it's something that takes a long time. We want to continue to roll out the tools that we've designed locally to support practitioners to fully implement the end-of-life care tools and to involve patients and carers in the decision-making around that care and to fully establish the academy, which we're all very excited about. Thank you very much for listening.